It's time for 41 is the Mic, a weekly Chiefs podcast with Nick Jacobs of KSHB 41 and Matt Derrick of Chiefs Digest. 41 is the Mic starts now.
Welcome, everybody, to the special bi-week edition of Super Bowl week for 41 is the Mic. I am Matt Derrick from Chiefs Digest, and alongside me is bi-week Super Bowl enthusiast Nick Jacobs from KSHB 41. Nick, how are you today?
I'm good, Matt. How about yourself? I mean, you know, it's a week till the Super Bowl, so, I mean, hey, I can't complain. If you're listening to this after that, then obviously it's even less time till the Super Bowl. But I mean, I don't know. I'm just really curious to see what the experience is going to be like, and for everybody being in Las Vegas and the setup there and how people are going to react to it and what they will or won't like about it.
Yeah, I'm interested to see too. This will be my third Super Bowl that I've covered, and the first two were fairly spread out. I mean, Phoenix was certainly better than Miami. But with Vegas, I mean, they know how to do conventions and events like this. Right. So it seems like, for the most part, everything in Vegas is within walking distance. It's just right there. And then, of course, they have the teams out in the boonies to make sure that they're far away from the action. Takes a little bit of effort to break curfew and get out and cause any trouble or anything. So very, very purposeful of the NFL and the teams to put them out at the lake and everything to keep them away from the strip and from all the allures that Vegas offers. But any of the fans going, I think it's going to be probably an incredible experience. It really sounds like, so far, other than the weather, it should be a great time.
Yeah, I was about to say, yeah, our meteorologists are predicting rain for Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. So, I mean, once you get past that, you know, should be a fun weekend part of it. But yeah, early on there, I don't know, you're going to be spending a lot of time indoors, which is what Las Vegas wants anyways.
This is true. And I know I've been scouting out to wondering, because it's supposed to be in the 50s, I think.
Yeah.
So not exactly resort weather, but there are days where I won't have to leave a building, Nick, because of the skyways between everything. Mm-hmm. So I think I could wear shorts on those days. But
hey, you do what feels right in your heart. I'm not going to judge you.
And just for you, Nick, because you're the one that usually brings the cool and the excitement and the entertainment to the podcast, and I'm the boring, stuffy shirt guy.
What are we going to be, sure, that? Why are you going to put yourself down like that? We're not going to do that today. We're bringing positive energy on this podcast.
We're bringing positive energy. I tried to spice things up a bit because I thought about, what's the best shirt I have for this occasion? Mm-hmm. And I felt like, because, hey, it's my third Super Bowl. Chiefs are going back for their fourth Super Bowl. So we're here. We are all here, mm-hmm, backed by popular demand, Nick.
Outstanding,
so
Matt.
I feel like maybe I should wear this on Super Bowl opening night, Monday night.
I mean, whatever you can do to stand out on opening night, ET, and then we'll definitely pay attention to you.
See, that's the problem. This wouldn't even be like above the median curve on opening night.
Well, Matt, you know, I don't know. I mean, keep workshopping it then. You've been there. I haven't. I've just seen the stories after the fact.
Well, the big thing about this week, obviously, is, of course, the game itself, Nick.
And
I know you've been pouring yourself into this. So we talked a little bit about this at the end of the AFC Championship game, but now we can kind of go more in depth in it. You know, looking at the 49ers, Nick, what scares you the most? If the Chiefs lose this game, why are the Chiefs going to lose this game?
Well, I mean, looking at their – I'll just start off with the 49ers offense. I would say pretty much what they do – runs through Debo Samuel and Christian McCaffrey. Like, that George Kittle, don't get me wrong, he's talented, he's a great tight end and everything, but if you don't have Debo on the field, that takes, it feels like it takes out like a third of their offense of what they're trying to do, whether he's the decoy or he's the guy getting the ball. And then that kind of puts more pressure on McCaffrey to be the guy, and then Kittle doesn't reap as many benefits off that, and then neither does Brandon Ayuk or Jennings or those type of guys and along the offense, or even Bell, who's kind of starting to sneak in a little bit more, so special teams, but at times maybe a couple catches here and there. So like, where Debo lines up tells you a lot about what they're doing and where they're going. And Christian McCaffrey gives away a lot of information, but I mean, I think above anything else, the number one thing that's going to me decide this game and how it goes is, how do the Chiefs defensive tackles perform? And the reason I say that is because how if they can get upfield and if they can disrupt the pocket, then that takes away a lot of comfort that Brock Purdy has, disrupts his rhythm, and then he gets out of sync and he starts making some dumb decisions, which he's more than capable of from the games that I've watched. And then it also kind of slows down what they may want to do run game wise with Christian McCaffrey. So what the Chiefs defensive tackles do, I think, is going to determine a lot of this game. And I got more to go in depth about, but I know you've potentially got some other questions and I don't want to hog all the time.
Well, and one thing that's, I mean, I think it's certainly going to be a factor, obviously, is the health of both of these teams. And the 49ers, I mean, to me, look to be a little bit better condition-wise than the Chiefs do. I mean, they didn't have any of their active 53 players listed as even questionable this week. Deebo Samuel's not on the injury report, which he has been in recent weeks. So, in theory, he is healthy, and that's, to me, a huge factor for the 49ers. You talked about the Chiefs defensive line in the interior. On the other side, Joe Tooney, how critical would it be to have Joe Tooney back for this game if you're the Chiefs?
I think they can get by. And the reason I say that is because the 49ers defensive line, they were a lot more aggressive earlier in the year, and kind of midway through, they decided to kind of start throwing back because they were just getting wrecked by the screen game, the quick traps, and kind of running inside off draws and stuff like that. So doing those type of things, they really, really, really struggled with kind of getting off the field at times, and that kind of really kind of kept – they were far too aggressive with their front four. And, I mean, the two keys on them are going to be Bosa. So that's typically going to be Juwan Taylor on his side, and how Taylor performs will determine a lot of that, because Bosa likes to shoot that inside shoulder a lot when he can, and he also likes to go wide nine so he can get upfield and kind of force the quarterback up and out of the pocket if need be. And then Armstead's the really other talented defensive tackle. Both of them were in the Super Bowl in 2019, but Armstead has the right type of power that you're looking for. And I know you're surprised because you're like, well, what about Hargrave and everything? Hargrave hasn't really shown up in the games that I watch. I mean, he kind of got his payday, but he doesn't have the same level around him that he did in Philly in terms of letting him kind of shoot gaps and really kind of attack. And he hadn't been as good of a fit as I think they were hoping for what they paid for. And then Farrell was doing a good job earlier in the year, but it's kind of, that end spot just kind of seems like a little bit of a revolving door rotation. And Randy Gregory, whenever he was in, he didn't really bring much to the table in some of the games I saw. So, yeah, they don't have as good of a defensive line this time around as they did in the 2019 one. And there's ways you can attack their aggressiveness, especially by running at them, maybe doing some jet sweeps underneath it with how wide they go. But teams know how far Bosa gets upfield, and they love to run off of Bosa when they can and really go after him. So, yeah, with Joe Tooney, I mean, would you like to have him? Sure. Do I think he's going to try to play? You bet. I think he's going to try to play because that's Joe Tooney in a nutshell. But I feel like for the most part, they're going to have to – There's different ways they can attack with the screen game, whether it's one of those Andy Reid specials to where, you know, you go this way, but then you toss back here, or you just do a screen out in the flats and things of that nature. The screen game will be there at certain times. You just can't live by the screen game, but there's plenty of ways to attack that 49ers defense. And the other thing I'll add, on third and six or longer, they do the 49ers, and this is different with kind of their past defense coordinators with Ryan's and with Osala. If it's third and six or longer, they'll either do simulated pressure or they'll actually bring a blitz. But it has to be third and six or longer before they're confident to do it.
How much do you take away from that game between these two teams last year? Because obviously, Chiefs pretty much dominated that game. I mean, it got a little bit closer at the end, but the not really that close in the grand scheme of things, and the Chiefs had their reserves in the back end of that game. Is there a lot that we can take away from that one, Nick, or do you just kind of have to really throw that one out the window on this one?
Well, with part of, you can use part of it just from a personnel perspective, but because you're going to be playing a lot of the similar secondary and everything, and you're going to have a lot of the similar defensive line for the most part, and linebacker-wise, it's going to be similar too. So, I mean, in terms of personnel, it's similar. But Ryans was calling that stuff back then, who's now with the Houston Texans, and he's got a different style than what Steve Wilks has as the defensive coordinator. Wilks is a lot more passive until third and six and kind of will let you do more against him. And I think Ryans at times kind of was willing to do attempt to what he had to disrupt and be more aggressive. And then obviously, you know, with Sala before that, it was kind of more of a Seattle, we're going to stay back and cover three in zone and good luck to you trying to fit inside the windows. So each one kind of had their own style, and it's, in all honesty, it's gotten less and less aggressive. So, I mean, and the Chiefs have had success against Wilkes before, whether he was in Carolina or Arizona at the time. And I think those were the times that they played him. I don't remember if they played him when he was with the Browns. But there's been a lot of opportunities to kind of attack them. And for the Chiefs, what they'll be able to do, and Andy will be great at this, you can dictate so much of what you can attack with them by how you spread out the formation. Do you make it a condensed formation? Do you do a tight bunch? Do you keep the bunch wide? Do you try to do trips? Do you try to put four receivers out there? What type of motions do you want to do? You can manipulate how they're going to cover and where the voids are going to be created. And I think that's going to be one of the bigger problems for the 49ers is the Chiefs dictating what they're going to be able to do more so than other teams they've kind of gone against. And that was a part of the problem when they played the Lions, is the Lions were able to dictate a lot of what they did. And the other concerning part that I found is that they don't fix a lot of their mistakes. And when I say that, I'll give you a play right now. And this is kind of where this kind of goes back to the Eagles last year. Because I saw when I was watching tape headed into the game, and I put it up in a package and everything last year, the motion that the Jaguars ran in week four, the Chiefs used to create the corn dog play that they scored two touchdowns on in the Super Bowl. That never got fixed in Philly, and that's on Philly for never fixing that. Something that was in week four, week five of the year never got fixed and got used again. Well, when I was going through tape, the Bengals on like week seven or week eight ran this double move to where it looks like a quick wide receiver screen, and they'd been setting it up multiple times in the game, but there's a double move off of it to Ja'Marr Chase that they scored a touchdown on. Now you go back to the Packers playoff game, Packers ran again for a wide open touchdown. And so for that span, that many games, for that not to get corrected and for it to actually be an even worse thing, like that kind of tells me that there's, and I know it's one play, but I've seen others. That's just the example I'm giving. That's the most blatantly obvious for people to find, is a lot of things aren't getting corrected or it's not getting through to some of the players. And I'm telling you right now, Oliver can get burned by the double move. Traverius Ward, he grabs, he holds because he cannot handle double move. So for the Chiefs, if Mahomes has far enough dropbacks, like he can hit a lot of double moves, and like the Niners are going to be in some trouble. So, I mean, there's a lot on the table for the Chiefs to attack.
Well, I think that kind of leads into my next question, because I started off with, you know, what scares you about this team and what would happen for the Chiefs to lose. You've kind of led into the answer a little bit there, but just specifically, what does a Chiefs win look like? What do you think that this team has done if they're able to pull this off and get their third Super Bowl title in four years?
Yeah, I think part of it is knowing what tells Christian McCaffrey, Kyle Juszczyk, and Deebo Samuel are giving away. Because I want you to think back to that Miami offense. They don't run it to the intensity that Miami does with emotions with Tyreek and going crazy with it, because they're not going to wear Deebo Samuel out with that. And Tyreek's like one of one in terms of stamina, being able to do that and that type of stuff. So you're not going to see an all-out Miami Dolphins thing. But the Chiefs having played Miami helps a great deal of what they're already going to be potentially prepping against that, and having seen some of that aspect of it. Because, for example, with Juszczyk, they will motion him. And when they motion him, typically what I've seen from about 10 games so far is when they motion him, they're either doing a pitch, they're doing a toss, or they're doing a screen to McCaffrey. And like they're using him to help block something, either as a pulling guard concept to kick out or do something of that nature. But where he's going, McCaffrey's not far behind for the most part. And so like he gives you that away. Now with McCaffrey, and these are So these are just things to keep an eye on with McCaffrey. Whenever he's typically going to run the ball and he's behind center and the quarterback's under center, he's 7 to 9 yards back. And when he's 7 to 9 yards back, he's typically going to run the ball. And with their offensive line, that's how far he has to be back depth-wise for them to be able to set everything up from a timing perspective, for him to effectively be able to run to the assigned gap or to be able to cut back. So whenever you kind of see him further back, if you kind of pay attention to those little nuances, you're going to be like, okay. It doesn't mean that they won't play action off of it, because they did in the playoffs a couple times. But for the most part, when he's that far back under center, you're like, eh, he's probably getting the ball. And they have, and they do it out of pistol too, as well. So they have that aspect of it. Now, whenever they're in shotgun, he's a little, if he's offset a little bit, and he normally is, and it's noticeable to where maybe he's a yard back from the quarterback, he's either getting ready to set up for a counter, or he's out of the way for the pop pass that they're getting ready to run, or the jet sweep that they may run, or he is going off to potentially block, or he's going out in the flats or to run an angle route. So, I mean, are there a lot of different options there? Yeah, but most of the time, whenever he's offset, he's not getting the ball unless it's typically an inside, you know, an inside run or a counter for the most part. So, like, you've kind of, you know what I'm saying? You kind of eliminate little things to where you know a 1-2-3, and you can diagnose with that. Then the other part of it is, if he's right on with the quarterback, it's going to be an off-tackle run. Like, he's typically not there whenever they're doing pass pro. He's typically not with the quarterback whenever they are, whenever they're even keel. When they're even keel with each other, it's typically something that's going to go to him. Not always, but for the most part. And then, and then with Debo, you always got to know where he's at, because he's going to, like I said, they align him different ways to try to open up certain voids for both him and himself, because they, it's like with Garoppolo, and this is what I'll say, they like to throw between the numbers. Most of their timing that they do route-wise is from number to number, and that's how they like to throw that. And Garoppolo was even worse, to where it wasn't even, he liked to keep it between numbers to hash, but they've opened it up, the offense, more to where it's number to number with Purdy. Purdy's very confident in his arm, and it's a little too confident, because he thinks he can make Patrick Mahomes type throws, but he can't. He doesn't have that ability like he thinks he does. He's gotten away with it with a handful of times, but he thinks that he can. And the reason I say that is because he's thrown across his body and in the middle of the field, and if he's playing the Baltimore Ravens, they end it pretty quick, and that's but the Bengals let him get away with it twice. But I'm like, if that's the Chiefs, that's intercepted. And he'll throw into tight windows. He threw into triple coverage whenever I saw one thing, just because he didn't think the safety could get there. He guessed right that time, but against the Chiefs, that would have been a pick. And he threw that to Kittle inside tight coverage inside the zone, and it was real tight coverage. And he was lucky he got it there, but he did. And so that's what I'm saying. I think above everything else, if they can take him out of rhythm by cluttering the middle from number to number, I think that's going to be keep him out of rhythm and to a certain extent at times. The next part is with simulated pressure, whether you do or don't use it, it does speed him up and he will get the ball out quicker. So if you drop in the zones out of that based on certain formations, you think they're going to attack and everything, you may be able to get a couple picks out of that because he will toss that quickly. And then if you do bring some guys off the edge, that'll speed him up too. And then he will either throw the ball away, which will be a win, or, you know, he will, he'll get amped up and try to take off. So you can manipulate him as a passer and put him on your terms instead of him just burning you. Like, you're not going to confuse him with Josh Allen. And like, that's not a knock on him. I'm just saying, Josh Allen was the best quarterback the Chiefs faced in these playoffs. And I do consider Purdy, in my opinion, Purdy, as a passer, he'll be the second best quarterback they faced. But as an overall quarterback, I think Lamar's a bigger threat, if that makes sense. Yeah. With his legs and with his ability, Lamar can create in a way that I don't feel like Purdy can. And then, unfortunately, Tua's the worst quarterback they faced amongst the bunch. But I want you to take a little piece of it to where the way the Chiefs rattled Tua, they can rattle Purdy in a similar way. It's just Purdy can actually make multiple reads where Tua couldn't. But there's certain things the Chiefs did against Tua that they can do against Purdy too and really cause them problems. So I hope I answered that as
you
best
did
as I could there. But yes, I think the Chiefs' defensive tackles will really, really push both things you're trying to eliminate in both run and getting Purdy uncomfortable. So the defensive tackles, their ability to push back, because, man, I'm telling you what, whenever guards get pushed back into Purdy, he turns into mush at times, and then he'll just toss it, and sometimes it wasn't the best decision.
Well, and what you've hit on there is what has been kind of the Chiefs' degree of success in the postseason against these quarterbacks has been to go after the quarterbacks and not worry about the weapons around them, but make those quarterbacks uncomfortable so they can't take advantage of those weapons the way they would like to. Because I don't think there's any doubt. I mean, Christian McCaffrey, I think, is the best running back the Chiefs will face in the playoffs.
Yep.
George Kittle's the best tight end they'll face in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
Brandon Ayuk, I would say, would probably be maybe the second best receiver they'll face in the playoffs after Tyreek.
I would put Zay Flowers above him.
I'd probably
I know
put,
that sounds weird to say, but
no, and Zay was the tough one for me because I probably left Zay at three just because, you know, he's not quite there yet. He's getting there, but Ayuk is an impressive receiver, and obviously
I'll put him in the top three for sure. All three of those guys are in the top three for sure of what they faced.
So you're talking about an incredibly tough trio right there to take care of. But Purdy is the weak link, for a better lack of a better word. I mean, mm-hmm. that's the guy that you have to go after. Interesting too. Last thing I wanted to talk to you about this is, you know, there's been a lot of focus on the Chiefs going through the toughest road possible to get here. And, you know, there's a lot of pride about that if the Chiefs fans, that if they can pull this off. My question is that a good thing or a bad thing? I mean, are the three games that they've played at this point, are they just simply good preparation for this? And the bye week helps out with any worries about, you know, overextension and overuse and overwork? Or is it a bad thing in the sense that, you know, they are going to be worn down? I mean, this has just been one struggle after another. There's only so much in the tank. Maybe this will be the hurdle because the 49ers have had a lot of rest and their run to the bowl has not been as tough, other than the first half of against the Lions notwithstanding.
What I would say is the bye week is huge for the Chiefs. Just like that's what helps them reset more than anything else. Being able, because I mean, they needed that full week after the Ravens, because that's about as physical game you're gonna play. But the 49ers played just as physical of a game against the Lions, more so than people realize. So both of them are coming in off of a physical game for the most part. It's just the 49ers had been there and done that before, and the Lions hadn't, so they could capitalize on a lot of the mistakes to really kind of turn back around. Otherwise, Detroit's in the Super Bowl right now instead of the 49ers. But I think the week in between was crucial, and I think that's what resets the playing field. Where it's going to help the Chiefs is having been there, done that three times before for some of the key people, some of the coaches, and having most of the team having been there last year. That is what is going to kind of keep them from being overwhelmed to a certain extent, because the Niners really only have seven starters on their team that were in the Super Bowl in 2019 that have been there, done that, but two of the guys that haven't been, and that's where a lot of that problem, in my opinion, is going to be, is Purdy hasn't been there and done that before. And like, that's the guy that you need to have been there and done that. McCaffrey's going to be getting, if I remember correctly, I think he's going to be getting his first taste of kind of the Super Bowl experience for the week. Cause it isn't the game itself. I mean, it is for like a quarter or so, probably, from guys I've talked to over the years, that kind of overwhelms you. And then the halftime kind of gets you out of rhythm as well. But it's the week, all the demands, all the media, that's what wears guys down and gets them out of their routine and out of their rhythm. And I think that's where a lot of that problem comes in for most teams, is just kind of how many demands there are during the week. And that's why whenever Andy said, hey, we're going to have the game plan in and ready before we fly to Vegas, then it's just kind of going over stuff and everything. Like, that's because that that Andy's been there, done that before. And so I just think the been there, done that factor is what is going to help the Chiefs really be able to get navigate this week. And it's also been what has helped them turn it on in the postseason, because they've steadily continued to climb and improve and turn it up to a certain level, while the 49ers have been against they've been up against the ropes twice. Like they were up against the ropes against the Packers. Jordan Love doesn't make a dumb decision. Niners may lose that game. And then the Lions kind of handed the 49ers the NFC Championship with some poor decisions and some poor management.
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt. I mean, the Chiefs have had to work harder to get where they are in this than the 49ers have. And I'm with you completely on the experience factor, because unless you have been through Super Bowl week, I'm not sure that anything can prepare you for it. I mean, I've been through it as a reporter, but even just watching it from a player standpoint, I can't even imagine, because the demands on your time are amazing. I mean, it's not just even the media availability specifically. It's all the other nonsense, too. I mean, it goes beyond just the open sessions with reporters. And there's going to be guys that haven't talked to a member of the media all season, right, who have to sit at a table and have reporters coming up to them and everything. And it's a madhouse. And it's not just once. It's 3 days. 4 days for some of them, because, you know, Tuesday is, you know, a limited day, but, you know, at least 13 of them will be, you know, having press conferences or visiting with reporters on Tuesday as well. So, yeah, I mean, that to me is, and I think we're already seeing the signs early of the Chiefs getting it and the 49ers not. I was really kind of surprised that Bosa and some of the things that he said in his press conference this week, specifically about, you know, the Chiefs and holding him, because then you contrast it with what the Chiefs players are saying. And, like, you know, I mean, Travis Kelce fell all over himself complimenting George Kittle and the 49ers. There's not going to be any, I don't think, unless somebody really, really trips up and slips up on the talking points from Andy Reid, there's not going to be any trash talking or bulletin board material coming from the Chiefs this week. There might be something that slips through, but at least the early signs are, to me at least, Nick, is that, yes, the Chiefs are preparing, are handling this better than the 49ers are. Doesn't mean that, hey, that's going to decide the game, but you're right. This is an experience, because players will see stuff and get things this week that they're not used to. And, you know, and the Chiefs are the home team, which means that it's not just game day in which they get to be the home team. They get to be the home team in everything. So they got to choose their own media times. They get to choose which practice facility. So they're at the Raiders facility. The 49ers are at UNLV's football facility. I wouldn't actually doubt UNLV might have nicer facilities than the Raiders. I don't know. Usually colleges are, but UNLV versus the Raiders might be a bit of a drop-off. But the Chiefs, relatively, other than the media appearances being at different times, their practices will be at the same time that they are in Kansas City. 49ers probably are to a degree, because they're going to be in the same time zone. So that's, I think, at least a benefit. Mm-hmm. But Andy Reid tries to do everything he can to make this a normal week, and it is anything but normal.
Yeah, but like we talked about, the benefit is they've been there, done that last year, and they've been there, done that before. So especially for the key guys who you need to kind of have been there, done that before, the Chris Joneses, the Travis Kelces, the Patrick Mahomes, Isaiah Pacheco's, almost the entire Chiefs secondary, you know, like they've all been a part of that. So like that, and then the linebacking group for the most part, minus Drew Tranquil. So yeah, now it's going to play a factor more than people realize. I know people didn't want to make a big deal when I kept emphasizing how big the weather was going to be for the Dolphins, and it was. And so like, you take this now, you just replace weather with the Super Bowl experience week. And that's the difference for a lot of the 49ers players there. They're going to try to lean on who they can, but they're going to be so out of sync with what they're used to and their rhythm and everything combined. While Andy is the home team, like you said, was able to take advantage of, try to put everything as close to the schedule as you can. And that'll help out to a certain extent. I know it sounds weird to say, but just sometimes, man, like, you know, if you take a PTO day when you're normally working and then you go in the next day, you're off a bit, and it takes you a little bit to get settled in. Well, however long it takes you to get settled back in. That could be the difference between a touchdown and being down 14 and not. So, I mean, may not seem like a big deal, but it can be bigger than you expect.
You are absolutely correct there. And this is going to be a big week for Chiefs and for us, Nick. We both got long weeks ahead of us.
Yeah, I'm going to ask you before we get out of here. What are you keeping your eye on during the week, and then maybe even in the game? Well, do week first, then game after.
I mean, I'm interested from the Chiefs' standpoint about the one X factor that they've got going into this week, which is Kadarius Toney. What happens with him and what he says during these media availabilities, assuming he's there? I mean, you know, Chiefs haven't obviously done anything to suggest that he's not going to be on the 53-player roster. Obviously not making him available in the words of Marshawn Lynch once. He was only there so he wouldn't get fined. Maybe Kadarius and the Chiefs are fine with a fine if he doesn't show up. I don't know what's going to happen. I just know that there's going to be a lot of pressure around him, and a lot of reporters asking questions about what was that Instagram post. I'm really interested too to see about how Travis handles this week and his, because this is going to be a different Super Bowl for him. As much attention as he's received in the past, as much attention as Patrick and Andy have received in the past, Travis is probably going to get that times three of all of them. It should be great for those of us who are going to be talking to other players, because there's probably going to be fewer, but I'm assuming that People Magazine and those kind of outlets that maybe don't have that many reporters there usually are probably there and beefing it up this year. So Travis is the one that I think is going to certainly probably have to have some advice from Taylor on how to handle this week, because his media attention is going to be astronomical. Mm-hmm. The rest of it, to me, I mean, that's, you know, I do and will look and see how these two teams handle their answers. Like I said, I could see, you know, a Chiefs player in a moment of weakness, maybe, you know, trying to make a joke that gets taken the wrong way and then it gets spun into bulletin board material. I'm really interested to see if the 49ers button it up a bit more this week and become more complimentary of the Chiefs, or they just try to play the top dog that they appear to think that they are and believe that they are. And the Chiefs are obviously embracing the underdog angle. So I think it's whichever team convinces themselves that they are the underdog will probably be in better shape on Sunday.
Yeah. And then is there something you're going to be keeping tabs on game-wise?
I mean, to me, yeah, I'm torn about how the Chiefs are going to win this game, because I do agree with you that I think that Brock Purdy is the point that you have to attack. That's the guy that you have to make uncomfortable. I don't think that Kyle Shanahan and that offense are going to get undisciplined like the Ravens did and get away from the run game. I don't think they're going to get away from McCaffrey. So that's the other key point to me. I mean, you've got to stop McCaffrey. And I mean, I believe this defense can do it. I mean, this defense has convinced me throughout the season that there's nothing that they can't accomplish. And given Steve Spagnuolo 2 weeks to figure out an offense, I think he's going to do it. And he's got the team to implement that plan. So we'll see what happens. But as much as it is on, I think that the Chiefs have to contain Purdy. I mean, if Christian McCaffrey has a big day, it's not good for the Chiefs.
And my next one for you, I gotta see, because I gotta give you spotlight, man.
I love it, man.
My next one for you, with Jerick McKinnon being designated to potentially return, and you were the first to report about what his injury was and that he had surgery on January 2nd for the core muscle, which for most people, that's basically a hernia. They just like to call it fancy because it's in that region. Kind of what do you expect him to potentially be available? You think this is gamesmanship? What is your thought process on this? And I'm going to be a fan here and ask it this way: who do you think they would sacrifice on the 53 for McKinnon if he could come up and play in the game?
Well, and that's the roster riddle that they've got too, because they have to make a decision by Wednesday, February 7th, about whether they're going to activate Sky Moore as well. You've got Charles and Minnehue that you can put on injured reserve and free up one spot, but not two. Mm-hmm. It would be so unlike the Chiefs to activate Jerick McKinnon after one week of practice and being away as long as he has. But then again, he is a veteran, so I don't, and he's a savvy guy. I mean, he's smart, he's sharp. I mean, he can handle it. So I don't think there's any worries about that. It would just be very unlike them to put him in that spot. And that, once again, you mentioned the surgery on January 2nd. I mean, 6 weeks is usually a minimum. Blake Bell had a similar surgery last year and couldn't get back in that fast. His recovery was longer than that, even. And then you throw in, you know, the fractured pelvis as well. I mean, my gut says that this is gamesmanship, and it's maybe even a little bit of a, you know, a gift, you know, to McKinnon as well, because he's going to be a free agent. And even though the Chiefs would love to have him back, you know, the fact that they've designated him to return is a little wink and a nod to teams around the league to say, Jerick's fine. You know, he's healthy. You don't have to worry. Come March 15th in the new league year, you don't have to worry about him. He's ready to go. So, hey, could it be just a little bit of gamesmanship on both sides? It sure could. And if the 49ers have to spend 5 minutes preparing for Jerick McKinnon, Andy Reid loves that. I mean, there's no doubt, because he would love to give them, take them 5 minutes away from worrying about something else. So, I don't know. I mean, I my gut says he will not play, but if there's something that he can give him this week as far as just being on the field, even if it's scout team looks, great. If it's just to disrupt the 49ers a little bit, hey, gamesmanship's never hurt.
Yeah, I'm interested to see how it goes. I was surprised when I saw that yesterday on the transaction thing. I was like, oh, okay. Well, all right. Well, I guess we'll see how that goes. So, yeah, that'll be interesting on that front. And then I've already got in mind who they would put on IR ahead of the game.
Who's your pick?
Other than a Minnehue, which I think when they do the Minnehue move, I think it'll be one of the defensive linemen from the practice squad onto the active 53 potentially. Whether that's Pinnell or Bugs or however they do that one, or even Dickerson maybe, because I think he's still on practice squad. But one of those three defensive linemen, I think, would be the guy who would replace Minnehue. But if I'm in the Chiefs' shoes, Kadarius Toney's had that hip and ankle for a while now, whether he wants to admit it or not, and he wants to set up his free agency and everything. Because, I mean, like we've said before, you don't get put on the injury report just to be put on the injury report. Like, they have to do it because you saw them about something that you had nagging you in your body, or you reported to them, and then they have to put that on the report, even if it's not serious or not. So the fact that they've done that means that he's had to go into the training room about that stuff a handful of times. So, and the fact that that's lingered as long as it has, I personally believe when he was doing that on Instagram, I think he was doing that to set himself up for potential free agency, as, you know, to kind of put those doubts away and everything. I just don't think it was the best look in how it was approached and done to try to convince people if he has to go get a new opportunity in the offseason.
Yeah, that is interesting, because the Chiefs essentially have three roster spots that they could use for Super Bowl week. Two of them being practice squad elevations. You got the third with Charles and Minnehue. I mean, obviously you can't use one of those for Sky Moore or for Jerick McKinnon on the practice squad spots, but and that's the tricky thing too, is that, I mean, Kadarius is the only one that might fit into a category where maybe there is even a non-football list that you could squeeze him onto, because he obviously, players been talking about, he just had a kid, his family did. So that was why he was on the injury report this past week, was for personal. So, I mean, there's a lot of Kadarius Toney questions that will need to be answered, not only just in the first 24 hours of Super Bowl week, but all week long.
You're not wrong, Matt. I cannot dispute that.
It's going to be an interesting one, Nick. Well, I will have my weekly Q&A on Tuesday night, one way or another. I doubt you're free enough with time-wise to join me, Nick, but as always, you have an open invitation.
Tuesday I can, because I'll still be off. But later in the week, yeah, I'm not, I don't know, we'll see.
Well, and definitely if you're in the Kansas City area, check out KSHB 41 for the Road to Vegas. Those shows are hot and fantastic. You guys have great stuff every single night. I've been enjoying it, so I hope everybody else out there as well. I will have daily content at Chiefs Digest and on our YouTube channel, because there's going to be a boatload of availability. So, and you know me, I'm going to try and get your stuff that you're not going to find anywhere else. So, you know, hey, if you're after you read the same story five places and some other places, I'll try and get you something a little bit different. So we'll try and spice it up for you a little bit. And I'll probably also try to squeeze in another a live session as well this week. So it's going to be busy. And then, of course, there will be everything pregame, during the game, and postgame, Nick, on Sunday.
It's just funny, like, when you look at the media schedule, I know people listening right now don't have access to it, but it's just a whirlwind from Monday through Thursday. And then Friday, nothing. Saturday, nothing. And then, oh, hey, the game's on Sunday. So, like, yeah, from Monday through Thursday, it's going to be quite the whirlwind of availability. You're going to have all the content you can handle, from whether you're a 49ers, Chiefs, football fan, like anybody and everybody's available. They're broadcasting opening night, you know, so that's going to be on. It's going to be on TV for people to watch for 2.5-3 hours. Like, it's just, it's, yeah, it's something that I think we've all gotten used to from a Super Bowl perspective. But man, from a content perspective, as somebody who has to put something together and fit it all within a 20-minute time slot with how much content's available, it, yeah, there's a lot of logs you go through to make sure you get the best sound for people and set up the stories that are given to you availability wise to educate people as much as possible and what's important during the week. But there's a lot of noise there too, with a lot of other things.
Yeah, and the two-hour time difference both giveth and taketh, Nick, because I'm really looking forward to that 3:30 kickoff, and should be, I might be done with work before midnight, Nick. I mean, on a Super Bowl night, that's uncalled for. I mean, I've never had that before, so I don't know how to experience that. It also means, though, that I have to be on a bus at 6:30 in the morning to go to the Chiefs training area in their hotel for the media availabilities on Wednesday and Thursday, and that's not my jam.
Well, then you may have the early Monday morning thing, depending if the Chiefs win or not, with the winning team and MVP speaking at the hotel. So
yeah, that's always a tight recovery.
That'll
be
early for KC media if the Chiefs win, because I'm not going to jinx it. So I always say that. And then, yeah, because it'd be 10:30 time Kansas City whenever they speak, and I think I saw on the sheet that it would be 8:30 Pacific time. That's quite a difference, man. Those hours are quite a difference in terms of getting up and getting ready and all that type of stuff.
But you, when you were in Miami, and I was on the bus in Miami after the game at 2 a.m. and then still had to be at the MVP press conference at 8:30. Yeah, at least this time it's still 8:30 in the morning, but we get the game over two hours early.
Yeah. So we'll see if the Chiefs can add another one of these behind me or not.
That's right.
Ooh, I just did the hitchhiker. I love it.
Yes, you did.
Very trademark move. We'll see if you start another one here in the next week.
You're starting around the room, Nick.
Yeah, I know. And I don't know if the weight will be able to hold a third one on there or not.
Well,
I'm not sure.
You might have to have some reinforcements done, but that would be a good problem to have.
Yes, it'd be a great problem to have. It would replace the Royals baseball right there. I can promise you that.
Tough break for the Royals, but You need another Lombardi up there.
Yeah, that'd be nice. And for people that want to see, this is the reveal. It says, this is my tea shirt. So I only drink tea in this shirt. Like, yeah, it's all I drink, except I've had water the entire time you've watched the video version of the podcast.
Well, and I also appreciate you playing with pain, Nick, today, because I know you're a little under the weather. So being here for us and for the pod, for the fans, you're a game day player.
I'm trending upward right now. Okay. Don't know what percentage, but I'm trending upward from earlier this week whenever I got the cold so.
Are you questionable on the injury report or?
I mean, I don't know.
I know you're a full participant. You always are.
I participate as fully as I can. How about that? Not as in shape as other players to where it does actually impact me more.
Well, we hope that all of you have a wonderful Super Bowl week. You enjoy the game. We, of course, in between all of the nonsense after the game and the MVP at 8:30 in the morning, Nick and I will find some time to bring you 41 is the mic.
Yeah.
So we'll figure
not
that
sure,
one out.
Not sure when. Not sure when.
We'll see. Play it by ear.
Exactly.
But with that, have a great week, and we will see you again next week right here, same place.
I bid you adieu.
You've been listening to 41 is the Mic, presented by KSHB 41, your home of the Chiefs and Chiefs Digest.